fake guesstimation, where you take what you feel inside and you say, maybe, baby, maybe, baby. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what that was either.
This is me. I make songs up.
I need the heart song of my spirit child to come out. And the only way that I can do that is through singing my heart song.
Yeah, and my heart song involves putting together words that my brain summons.
And really, I shouldn't judge you for singing your heart song.
Good Lord, no, man. Yeah. You can't crush a person's heart song. That's like crushing a newborn anything.
Yep.
Just imagine it. No. Don't need to describe that image. Yep. That's not an image. I was thinking,
you know, like an insect or something. So it wasn't too graphic.
Thinking of something much worse. Yeah.
Anyway, we're actually here not to talk about that.
For an indeterminate amount of time.
Yeah.
We're here today to talk about Bloodborne.
I said it like a human person says the word.
I said it like a crazy person would say the word, which is on topic for Bloodborne.
Bloodborne.
Good Lord, Bloodborne. David, we haven't done the welcome to the podcast.
Well, everyone, welcome to the fucking podcast. I'm Slowpoke number 2, David Chalante.
I'm Slowpoke number 1, John Nicolaitis.
If you couldn't, like, read or whatever. You happy now, John?
Jeez, man. Cool, you jets. Yes, I am happy.
Look, repetition is important. I really need the listeners to understand that John thinks that you're stupid and wouldn't know what you'd been listening to for the past however many minutes unless I actually told you.
I just want everyone to understand that David doesn't appreciate what we do and he's just not willing to.
I guess I don't have pride in the work. Yeah.
You just don't have pride in the work we do. You just want to start willy-nilly. You don't want to. You don't want any structure. You don't want any form. You just want to be free. Goddamn hippie.
Yeah.
You see his long, flowing hair and all the birds that are on him. He just...
Yeah. I'm like the brown wizard from The Hobbit.
Yes. Radagast.
I have a bird that shits in my hair.
Yep. Why I have that name? Just don't know why.
But Bloodborne. Yep. Bloodborne is what we're talking about today. So, as is obviously the purview of our show, at least one of us won't have played this game before playing it for the episode.
Yeah.
This case, neither of us had. Bloodborne is something that neither of us had played because neither of us had PS4s. It's a PS4 exclusive.
I'm sure I would have played it if it came out on literally anything else.
Yeah, I mean, if it was on PC. Like, PC is the only thing I run this current generation. I might get a Switch when that comes out.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it was on PC, I probably would have played this a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Because, as is also a pattern with what we choose here, lots of people talked about it, lots of people loved it, and it seemed like an interesting thing that was worth understanding.
Yeah, no, totally. Especially when you think of... Because it's from Software, which is the makers of the Dark Souls games, and also Demon Souls, and it... Those games get talked about a lot as well.
It's such a cult following. Like, it sounds a little bit cliched me to say that, but a very, very passionate, dedicated following. The people who like those games love the shit out of them.
Yeah, a lot. And they're very, very passionate about it. Mm. I mean, that's what I hear about. You hear about... I mean, like, I don't hang around on the internet, some of these places where people congregate, because I'm a loner. But I just hear secondhand of these places where everyone goes and they just talk about these games over and over, and they just talk about the story and the tips and things and stuff. And
like, what's part of one of the main things that probably dissuaded me from playing this game before is that challenge and difficulty aren't really my thing. I don't go into a game to have a hard time. Yeah. I go into a game to have, you know, a narrative experience, or to sort of, like, this sounds very wanky to say it, but to engage with art, you know, to do something that I feel kind of helps me grow, or, you know, is fun in a different way, is fun in a more relaxing kind of way. I don't generally go into these things wanting to get my heart rate pumping, my adrenaline flowing, you know.
Yeah, when I think about difficulty and stuff like that, I only think about it in terms of engagement.
Yeah.
If it adds to me feeling engaged, if it adds to me feeling immersed, if it adds to a sense of tension, if it has a narrative purpose, then I'm all for it. I typically play games on slightly higher than average difficulty just because I like the mechanical processes.
Yeah, almost always run normal. Yeah. Like, it's very rarely the... Like, unless it's something like Portal or The Witness, where it's like a puzzle challenge kind of thing, the challenge of a game isn't necessarily what draws me to it. And obviously, one of the big things about the Souls games in general is that they have that promise of like this punishing world, this unforgiving, no hand-holding world. So that was like a major expectation I walked into Bloodborne with, that it wasn't going to be kind to me.
I mean, the ad campaign of Dark Souls 3 was prepare to die.
Yeah, which
is a bit on the nose.
Yeah, and it's all like, I've heard other people complain about that because it implies that the game is going to be unfair, but the thing that they say about is that the cliche is tough but fair, right?
Yeah.
It's very, very punishing, but if you're paying attention and you do things properly, you can get through it. It doesn't punish you unfairly. So that was like another thing as well. I was expecting it to be very, very highly polished and very, very well designed in terms of the challenges that it offered you.
I think this is a good point to point out a couple of things for the intro kind of stage. That like how we're going to be talking about the game and how specifically you're going to be talking about the game.
Yeah, we might just want to front load that. Look, I'm just going to say it up front. I liked Bloodborne. Ultimately, I liked it, but I really wish that it didn't make it so fucking hard for me to like it. There's a lot of complaints I have about this game, and I do understand that a lot of the things I don't like about it were very deliberate design choices by the makers. But them doing something I don't like on purpose doesn't mean that I have any more fun with it, right? I appreciate that other people love it. I don't think that they're dumb for liking it. I understand that it's awesome that a game that's this specific and has this kind of incredibly targeted and incredibly you know niche sort of thing going on, it's great that that can exist. I would have had a lot more fun with it if it was just a normal fucking game. If it just had learnt from the past 20 years, you know?
Yeah, it does fall into its own niche, which can I find some of the things it can do can be rather grating if you... sometimes people don't sort of notice certain experiences and they'll really notice others.
Yep.
So if the things that a game is doing great on you, like a game that doesn't let you jump, like for example, that just always annoys me, right? And I'll just anytime I get into games, it's like, well, I can't jump. I'm like, well, apparently my legs can't leave the ground unless I'm walking somewhere. That always just makes me feel a bit weird. And we can all have those kind of things. And I think this game might have just hit a lot of them for you.
Yeah,
and
just kept... I know that it's one of these things that's just not my thing. Like my brother is one of the people who's in love with the Soul series, and he's been trying to push me to play one of the Dark Souls games for a while. And I was always dissuaded from that because, like I said, I'm not a huge fan of these punishing kinds of difficulty. You know, I don't want to go into a game and get angry.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to.
You don't want to get home from a hard day's work and just be frustrated and mad at a little box under your TV.
It's like, I feel shitty enough coming home from a stressful day of work or whatever and then playing something relaxing, because I almost feel like that was a waste of time. Yeah. It's like all I did was play something thoughtless and mind-numbing so that I could, you know, wind down a little bit. Why would I play something that just maintained the emotion I'm trying to manage and, you know, get away from?
That's true.
As far as other expectations going into Bloodborne, though, other than, you know, trying to prepare myself for that really punishing, tough but fair experience.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a horror-themed game. I was expecting some interesting monster design, interesting, you know, use of that kind of those horror tropes.
I heard from some people that they were too scared to play like sections of this game with the lights off and with the headphones on. They had to play it during the middle of the day and stuff like that. So I was personally expecting a lot of that kind of like horror to be there and to be scared.
Like, because it's also got that Lovecraftian aesthetic and, like, you know, a lot of the classic gothic horror looks. I was expecting a lot of the horror to be quite psychological and quite slow paced. And obviously, there's also something that the Souls games in general kind of promise, is that they have a very dense narrative that's communicated mostly through environmental storytelling.
Yeah.
So I was looking forward to that because I am a huge fan of less than completely typical ways of communicating a story, if that makes sense. Like, I hate exposition-heavy sections of games and stuff like that. So I was looking forward to something that kind of built my understanding through that kind of exploration. And
that will, reward you from exploring and noticing things. And, you know, and it would be a richer experience because of it. You would go around and
It's very much worth reiterating at this point. These were the expectations I had before I started the game. We're actually going to start talking about the game itself now and our experiences having played it. And like I said, ultimately, I like it, but a lot of the things I was looking forward to weren't there, and a lot of the things I was anticipating of being bad were a lot worse than I thought they were going to be.
And in talking about pre-warnings, we try and go into these things spoiler free, and with some past experience, we're trying to lean more towards that as well.
Yeah,
if we can, just to keep it as fresh as possible. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if we could spoil much of this game, even if we tried.
Neither of us finished Bloodborne, and it doesn't feel great to come into a podcast and being like, yeah, let's talk about this game that we haven't finished yet.
Oh, yeah, I called you the other night and was like, we had like a talk, and I was like, whoa, man, like, I gotta let you know, like, I'm not here.
But something I think we said way back in the first episode is that part of, like, we're not trying to hold ourselves to some kind of pure journalistic critic reviewer kind of standard here. And what we're doing is we're playing games because we want to see how we feel about them and how we react. And if we're playing a game that neither of us are really enjoying that much, why would we force ourselves to continue with it? And also, like, there are going to be a lot of long games like this we just don't have time to finish.
That's true. And like, I quite enjoyed my experience with Bloodborne, probably a lot more than David did.
Yeah, I would bet London to a brick you had more fun with this game than I did.
Yeah.
But Yharnam to a brick.
Yeah, most definitely. But even things that you love, you just don't... Sometimes you just... It takes months, like, you know?
Yeah.
You only have time here and there, and life comes up. So even if you enjoy something thoroughly, like I did with... I enjoyed The Witcher so much, and I'm enjoying this as well. In fact, I'm going to probably play some more Bloodborne, you know? You just don't get the time.
Yeah.
Stuff gets in the way.
I agree with that. I think that if I owned this game for, you know, like if I was focusing on this game, because I'm just so we're all clear, I didn't go out and buy a PS4 just for this game. I borrowed it from you.
Yes.
And if I had my own PS4, this might be something I'd plug in like once a week, once a fortnight, just to do a bit of grinding, maybe see if I can get to the next box, poke around the world a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's not something that would ever be my go-to game, ever, you know? So, as far as all of getting that out of the way is concerned, why don't we actually start talking about the game, since we actually understand it now. We'll start with how the thing looks, a nice safe place, spoiler-free place to go with.
Spoiler-free place to go with, I think. So, I think I was honestly a bit surprised by how Victorian-themed this game was.
Yeah, because it's like hyperbolic Victorian aesthetics, you know?
Hello, Governor!
And it's like, obviously nobody talks like that, but like...
They should. It would have made the game better.
As far as, like, it's got that gothic Victorian aesthetic.
Yeah,
like,
all the buildings.
But it's ridiculously exaggerated, right? Yeah. Like, when you first come above ground, you're way, 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 way up in the air. Like, the buildings are really ridiculously tall, and everything is incredibly steepled.
Yep.
It's that Victorian gothic thing turned up to 11.
Yeah. Like, and then on acid, like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it like...
Actually, I feel bad about saying that. When I say that it's on acid, I was incorrect. Because acid would imply a certain level of what I would call creativity. sort of depth of color and things like that. This game is not like being on acid at all.
Yeah.
Right? This game is caffeine.
It's like, I said something to you before the podcast, and it sounds very facetious, but it feels like people talked about the environmental storytelling in this game and the environmental design, and it's being like amazing and just like so great, and the Souls series is known for how great that is. Like, I went into this and was really surprised by how generic it was, and I think if it hadn't been talked up quite so much, I wouldn't have been disappointed by it, but it just feels like, okay, it's a gothic horror aesthetic, you've heard of Frankenstein and Dracula and Lovecraft...
Ta-da!
And you also know that Games Workshop exists, so you turned everything up super exaggerated.
Yeah, I think the Games Workshop connection for me, because I've read a lot of the other world, the extra fiction and the pitches and the stories and stuff. So yeah, to me, this felt really familiar.
Mm.
It was like, oh, we're doing this. Oh, we're doing this style of fantasy. Oh, okay.
Right. And it's like in going back to that Games Workshop thing, like, there is the Inquisition in Games Workshop, and they wear the wet Founding Fathers hats and the leather, and they have the pistol and the sword. And it's like, a lot of the aesthetic, it isn't obviously quite so spacey or fantasy as Games Workshop goes with it, but that's kind of my point, is that it's this thing where they've made everything taller, but it doesn't... Like, it doesn't strike me as interesting. Like, it's at least Yharnam itself, right?
Yeah.
There are parts... Because just so the people who have played this game kind of have a scale of it, like, the last thing I did in the game was defeating the Shadow of Yharnam and getting up to Bergenworth and going through that building, and you...
I got out of the crypt. I can't remember what it's called now, the one with the O. The
Odegons or Crypt or whatever.
This is probably incredibly early. I don't. Like, yeah, I can't
you
know.
Said you got up to Vicar Amelia, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I didn't experience very much of that. So yeah, let's be clear.
So both of us are relatively early in the game because I think that's like. By raw numbers, I think that puts me at about 20-25% of the way through the game.
No idea.
Obviously, I explored a lot around that. But when I was going through the Forbidden Woods and stuff, that was more interesting than Yharnam itself. And I did start to get hints of that really deep environmental storytelling that people were talking about. But again, they were just hints, you know. And at this point, I'd been playing the game for 20-30 hours.
And that's a lot of time. Like, that's, to me, that's a big investment. 20-30 hours, that's a month of, like, typically.
Because I've heard people say that you win the game in 40. And I was nowhere near the end of the game.
I think I said that. I think I said to you, I went up to Time to Beat or whatever, and it said 50 hours. And I was honestly a bit surprised. And playing the game as well. I'm like,
maybe it's like your second run through or something.
If you knew the game like the back of your
hand. Or if you were like familiar with other Souls games, maybe. Yeah,
maybe, that's true. I just found that aesthetic. I enjoyed it. It was very subtle. It was just a nice backdrop. It allowed me to easily slot into the game. But then again, like it didn't really super engage me.
Yeah, and I think also, I've said this already, but I feel like the game's reputation kind of worked against it. Because when I walked into this aesthetic, I'd seen it in all the screenshots and a couple of Let's Plays and shit beforehand anyway, so that wasn't like a surprise to me at all.
Yeah.
There's something else I will mention. Like, I feel like the creative element of this, we're just purely talking about looks of the environment here. The creative element wasn't that great, but as far as the actual raw execution of building it goes, it is incredibly detailed.
Oh, totally. And like, you go into the streets and there's boxes and there's things and there's carriages and it's all laid out. And it's all very...
And sometimes it feels a little bit cluttered, but like at the same time, I feel like just little things that make... Like there's a point... It sounds really dumb, but there's a point where you're going through the forest, and one of the moments that struck me was you're going down this hill, and there are these sleepers that have been laid out in the mud there to make walking down a little bit easier. Just like little points of detail like that aren't necessary, but I look at that and go, someone had to sit there and go, you know what, there should be some things to make this hill easy to walk down. Otherwise, the environment wouldn't feel that real and lived in and stuff like that. So the attention to detail is very strong.
As far as
like the look of the thing goes.
So in terms of that physical appearance, I can't for life of me remember any music in this game. Like, I know we got it right here. We got this listed down here. It says music, and I honestly, if you ask me right now, I'll probably tell you there's no music in this
game. That was a note of mine, because I have some very small things to say about the music. Most of the time, you don't hear very much of it, but in the boss fights, the music plays because it's a big, epic boss fight, right?
Yep.
I fought 5 bosses, and I know that at least one of them had a different track, but most of them had the exact same boss fight track. And that was really repetitive, because you come up against one boss at least 10 times. You know what I mean? Like, and then you go to the next boss, and the same music plays. I'm just like, this is the Cleric Beast music, but I'm fighting a totally different... Like, I really would have liked it if they had... Each boss had its own, like, theme music or something, just to make it a little bit less samey.
It does make it feel a little cheap, and it's definitely very repetitive. It's just like, oh, it's the Hollywood action score, number one, from the top, again.
It's the monsters in general are something that I was also kind of disappointed by. So you've got the boss monsters, they look really interesting, but you're generic. And again, this is coming back to like the environment design and how generic and uninspired I thought it was. Like, you've got these gray people that are basically zombies, you've got these werewolves that are basically werewolves, you've got these ghoul things that are basically ghoul things,
trolls who are trolls, you've got dogs that are dogs,
and it's like, especially in the early part of the game, a lot of that is very uninspired. Like, and we were talking about The Witcher in the first episode of this. Even the most basic monsters, like the Drowners, which are their zombie monster, are so interesting to look at. And the lore behind why they look that way makes sense. But in this, it's like, here's a dude with a torch.
We don't know
why. He wears a top hat and he wants to kill you.
He looks a bit strange, but he talks like a normal person. Yeah. Maybe there's something there.
And I'm sure that, like, some of this stuff does kind of get revealed later on. But like I said, I'm sort of 20-25% of the way through this game.
Yeah.
Still have no idea why these people are the way they are.
Also, let's be clear, right? If you don't show me something interesting when I start playing a game, I'm just going to get bored.
Yeah, there's a thing called a hook, right? Yeah.
And like, I understand there's different hooks for different people. And like, this Bloodborne has hooked me. I do find it very satisfying to play.
Mm.
But it's not really giving me much.
Yeah, you know? I feel like I'm not expecting the game to apologize for this at all, but I feel like it's catering to a very, very specific group of already invested people. I feel like it's preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
Totally fine.
Yeah.
Totally 100% fine.
There is room for it.
Yeah, and it's awesome that there are games that are doing that rather than just going for broad market appeal or whatever. I would never say that it should just go for straight broad market appeal, but I could have done with some more orientation, especially since Bloodborne, at least from a theoretical perspective, is a standalone game. It isn't part of the Souls series proper. It isn't part of that trilogy.
Again, as someone who hasn't played... I've played some of Dark Souls 1, right? And there are four games in that series.
Yeah.
Demon's Souls, right? No understanding of the full narrative experience of the world.
But see, my brother is a huge fan of the Souls series, right? I was talking to him about, in Dark Souls 1, after, you know, character creation, what do you know about the world? And he's saying, like, so it starts with this cutscene, and you understand that there are dragons, and there are periods of lightness and light and darkness, and then you understand that souls power the fire, and the fire is what gives life. Like, I the details escape me, but he was telling me about what you know when you start. So you know how the world works, and you have an immediate goal and an idea of what your overarching goal will eventually be. None of that in Bloodborne.
No,
Do character creation. Someone puts some blood in you.
Yep.
And I don't know if I volunteered for this, if I've been conscripted, if I've been
captured
or whatever. I don't know why blood is relevant. I don't know why the town is infested by monsters. I don't know if that's a temporary thing or if it's like this all the time. I don't know what the hunter's dream is about. I don't know.
I don't know if I should be fighting these monsters or which ones I should be fighting. Or if it's okay or if it's actually wrong.
Yeah, it's like the stuff that was put in me. Is that why all of these people are going crazy and trying to kill me? Will I eventually turn into one of them? I don't know the answers to these questions. And it isn't like a compelling mystery. You know what? It's not presented in that way where it's like, find out. It feels like they've just thrown you in the deep end.
And just to, like, again, like, I understand that there are a certain number of people who like this kind of stuff. But for me, it really does feel a bit too much like nothing. No teasing, no nothing, no anything. Just like, this is all a bit weird. You want to find out? Better start playing.
Yeah, like, you go to speak to, I think his name's German, right?
Yep.
And he says, oh, you're a hunter. It might be confusing. Don't think about it. And immediately I'm just like, oh, would you fuck off? Would you fuck off, please? Like, don't tell me not to ask questions. And I understand that there's a difference between the character saying that and the game saying that. In this situation, I feel like that was the designers saying,
just play the game.
Just play.
Yeah.
Stop asking questions and just play. Then you go into like a corner of that room and you find one of the little notes that the dude's left. And it says something along the lines of, kill all the monsters or you'll be trapped in the dream forever. Like a sentence and a half. And I'm just sitting here thinking like, why though? Why? Tell me more. Help me understand.
It can't just be because you're trapped here.
Yeah.
That's not really
Don't say video game to get the end of the video game points and say I did the video game. Like, I want to understand from like an actual narrative perspective why any of this fucking matters, you know? And I need that. I personally need that as a player. I need narrative and emotional investment in games like this, and I didn't get it, and I still haven't got it, being like a quarter of the way through it.
I think after design, the kind of next main thing that I was kind of excited about and really wanted to get into is the sort of the meat of the game, the fighting, the combat, the going around and encountering new monsters and beating them up and learning how to fight them, all that kind of stuff.
Obviously, like any game in a Souls series is renowned for the difficulty of it, and the challenge is the combat, right?
Yes.
Is defeat these creatures.
Exactly. And I was excited when I started playing because, you know, the game sort of puts you in a situation and dicks on you, and then it gives you a bunch of options.
Yeah.
And then you get to explore those options. But then it doesn't really ramp up at all.
Yeah, for me, I was very underwhelmed by the combat system in this game. Again, that's an effect, a consequence of the game's reputation, because people talk about the precision needed in combat. It's like so punishing. It's tough, but it's fair, right? And so I was expecting a combat system that, even if it wasn't like Devil May Cry levels of darting around the place, super responsive, I would expect it to be like, you know, fair, for want of a better term. I would expect it to be more polished than it is, it to be more intricate than it is. But I felt like so much of that combat system was just kind of loose and poorly designed.
Clunky,
yeah, that's a good word for it.
Non-responsive sometimes. I constantly, still to this day, I find myself like trying to trigger like stuns and locks, like what is it, visceral attacks. It's like, it's always, visceral attacks are always talked about like this is an exciting thing, and it must be for Dark Souls players.
Yeah, but like backstabs and stuff.
As someone who's played other games and came into this, I was just like, oh, I can just do mass damage, but you can stun characters, and like you're supposed to do it at certain times when they're attacking. And I would find myself trying to initiate a visceral attack, but like it wouldn't work, or it would work, but I would get knocked down as well. And then it wouldn't
there's
be
a
effective.
Lot of little stuff like that. So like you went to do a visceral attack, you stun the character, and then you do a light attack against them, and the character does this huge, like they basically rip the enemy's heart out. Right,
I think that's the implication. Yeah,
and the number of times I had a stunned enemy and then would try to do a visceral attack by hitting the light attack button, but my character, instead of doing the visceral attack, would just do a light attack. It was probably one in every four times I tried one. And it's just like, you know, I stand right up close, right in front of the guy, swing, and I don't do the visceral attack. And there's a lot of little things like that. Like, dodging is another thing that's kind of frustrating for a number of reasons, because, like, sometimes you'll double tap a button and sometimes it'll cue those two actions, but other times it'll just ignore one of them. So you don't know when you've double tapped the dodge button if you're going to do two dodges successively or if you're going to do one. Sometimes like you'll dodge around someone when you're locked onto them and they move in a particular way that means that, like, rather than dodging a quarter turn to the right like you were expecting to, you kind of do this weird spiral thing and end up in a total, like, because your camera tracks them at the same time. The lock-on system is something I have a lot of complaints about.
I think there's a very, like, when I play it and experience it and when I read reviews about it, I think this is one of those things that might get into, again, it's like, this is what people are expecting. This is kind of what people want. It's like, it's kind of, you know, you choose when to use the lock-on system. You might lock onto a character to get readjusted and unlock or this and that. And I get that, but...
For me, it was just... It was hard to know whether a lock-on system, which theoretically is designed to make it much easier to keep track of where an enemy is, a lot of the time made it harder. With Vicar Amelia, who you fought, the lock-on point is her head, and Vicar Amelia is like this large dog creature. So she's this towering kind of jackal, and she hunches over, so her head is much further forward of her than her legs, which is the only part of her you can actually hit.
Yeah.
So if you're standing to the side of her, you're actually angled like 45 degrees to the left because you're locked onto the head. There was a monster later on that was kind of like this bug creature, and its head extended really far out from its body. So that if I was in front of the creature and locked onto it, trying to attack its body, my back was facing its body because I was turned around looking at its head that's jutted out so far to the front. And a lot of people, like you say, you know, they expect that kind of thing going in. I remember, again, mentioning that to my brother, asking him if, you know, in the Dark Souls series, things were the same. And he kind of laughed and was like, yeah, no, they're all like that. He kind of got a kick out of it being clunky like that. But for me, I just look at that and go, this mechanic is specifically designed to make tracking the monsters easier. And half the time it makes tracking the monsters harder.
Yeah.
You know, like, to me, that's just, it just doesn't make any sense that it would work that way.
And I don't, talking about like learning curves and stuff, maybe at hour 60 when I've played through most of this game and I just know where the game is broken.
Yeah.
Right? But coming into it, I'm like, well, I feel a little betrayed, in the way that it's like, well, I know that if I do this, like if I hit these buttons in this order, I should do this, but it doesn't always work.
It doesn't happen in this situation. And it isn't because the enemy is clever and understands blah, 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 blah. It's because, oh, for this enemy, we made you lock onto the head instead of the body or whatever.
Or like, you know, if you turn at this moment, the attack will go this way or sometimes you just won't know how to... You can trigger different types of swipes at different times. Like, I know that if you do a light attack and then you do your trick,
some
weapons transform.
That's one of the things that really pissed me off, is that if you press the button that turns your weapon from its short form to its long form...
Depending on what the weapon is, of course.
Yeah. In combat, sometimes it'll transform, but other times you'll do this heavy strike that transforms it.
Yeah.
And so you don't know how long it's going to take when you press the button. It's another one of those things that I find bizarrely inconsistent. And again, it's not like I've just walked into this and we're 5 minutes into the game. Like I said, I'm 20, 30 hours in. I still can't rely on things, basic things like the lock-on mechanic, the dodge mechanic, or the transformation mechanic in combat.
Yeah.
You know, or the visceral attacks or any of that kind of stuff. It just feels very, like I said, kind of, it's not tightly designed. And you're also talking about betrayal, which is a funny word that sticks out to me because we're recording these episodes out of order. So we've already recorded the Undertale episode and the Witcher episode. And in both of those games, I use Bloodborne as an example of a game in which it has an incredibly tightly, precisely designed combat system. And now I've played it, and I'm like, it's actually just not, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
especially both those games we have played.
Yeah.
And games we played before. They had very interesting systems, and they understood what their, like, their... It's just, like, especially because I think of Undertale, especially. Yeah. And the boss fights and the encounters in that...
Yeah, they're so brilliantly designed.
All the way through.
You're so invested, and you understand why you're fighting, and all of this, everything that's missing for me, for Bloodborne, is present in Undertale.
Yes,
like, it's really exactly true. Like, I feel like the fights are much more fair than they are in this. I feel like the fights...
More engaging. Understand where you are, where you're coming from.
Yeah, every boss has its own music.
Good lord, the music, right? It helps at the tone.
And that's designed
and
by what? Like, five people?
I think one or two. I don't know specifics, but yeah. Undertale's a small team. The guys made Bloodborne. That's a proper studio made this game.
It's surprising, and we kind of come back to that idea of personal investment, right? Where a game like Undertale, much less money, much less time, and much less stress for a much bigger reward. And again, I'm talking about myself and my own subjective likes here.
So this is a subjective...
I totally understand there are people out there who would hate Undertale, and they're not wrong, you know?
None of us are wrong.
Yeah. And there are people out there who love Bloodborne. And again, I feel like I'm a broken record here. It's awesome that the game exists. Ultimately, I do like it. And it is awesome that the people who really love it have access to it, because it is a very unique game.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm just kind of sitting there playing this game, getting up to a boss, trying to beat the boss just because I'm angry at the boss, occasionally asking myself, why am I still doing this when I could be playing, you know... any of the other games I bought on Steam sale, or it could be playing Soma, or it could be playing Last of Us, or whatever we've got planned for the future. It's never a good sign when you're doing something that's supposed to be fun and saying to yourself, why am I doing this?
Mm. Yeah, no, that's true.
Mm. But the other thing that kind of frustrates me a little bit about the combat is how much of it requires that idea of, like, cheesing to get through. Like, this is another thing that a lot of people talk about as a positive for the game, for this whole series in general, is that, you know, this guy is next to impossible to beat, this creature is way over leveled, you know, the game is broken, deliberately broken, in this way. But, what they also do is they give you this part or this door that the monster can't get in, or this high ground that the monster can't attack you from. And so then you can actually defeat this next to impossible monster trivially without it even being a challenge. And I don't like that at all.
Do they do it intentionally? Because to me, like, if you're telling me that they made a monster too big, but you can pull them to a doorway that you can stab them through repeatedly, and you're telling me a designer sat down and went, this is a great idea... I find that surprising.
Yeah. See, I don't know, right? But this is what I've heard other people say in podcast. Like, the Extra Credits guys talk about the Souls games in this way. That, you know, this monster is... And, like, there's an example where the first boss is the cleric beast, right? And most of the way there, you're fighting just these generic dudes. I don't know I don't even know who these dudes are. These gray dudes, vile bloods or something.
The members of the Hunt. They're like.
But I thought I was a member of the Hunt. No, I don't even know.
They're like. Yeah. Look, this is us trying to spoil the game.
This lynch mob, right? You're going through fighting members of this lynch mob, and they're relatively. You know, they start off pretty hard, but you get the idea of how to take them down, and you get through them. Then you get to a point where there are these two werewolves that are so much more difficult. Like, you're killing these lynch mob members, you're getting maybe 100 blood echoes. Oh, yeah. You kill these werewolves, you get like 2,000 blood echoes from them.
Oh, that's true. And like,
So they're gated right in front of the boss. And you can't kite one without proccing the other. So you either have to just get really fucking good or really over leveled to take these guys down. Or you run past them and go down the stairs and they can't get through this door. And then you attack them. And so looking at the way that was laid out, I have to think it was deliberate, right? It seems deliberate, the way the pieces are all put there. But I don't find that compelling because I don't feel like I've defeated a difficult enemy. I don't feel like my character in the scope of the world has outsmarted something. I feel like I, as a player, have exploited a weakness in the game.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like it's a very underwhelming way to overcome things. And a lot of the bosses are like that as well. They require some level of this cheapness for you to beat them.
I always feel like these are things that would get patched out of a game. You know what I mean? Like, but I guess they're in there because people like it. And again, that's fine. But like,
I don't think anything in this game is anything but deliberate. I think that, I don't think that anything in this game is an accident. Because it's like the fourth or fifth one that they've built of this style,
I think. I think they were making Bloodborne while they were making Dark Souls 2.
And that's why a lot of people think Dark Souls 2 was shit, because the dude from Software who's supposed to be the genius was doing Bloodborne instead of Dark Souls 2.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think they were concurrent. But the idea of that, like, there's two things about that cheapness that bothers me. The first is, like I said, it doesn't give me a sense of reward. The second is that, you know, for a game that's so lauded for its environmental storytelling, I'm constantly looking for ways to exploit the video gaminess of the world, which just completely shatters my immersion. I can't sit there and be like, wow, I really am immersed in this bleak, dark world of Yharnam, when I'm like, hang on, I need to get this guy caught on the corner of the geometry of this gravestone. I've got to be careful because the hitbox on this isn't the same shape as the polygon count of it, so that means I can exploit this system in this way.
Yeah,
you know,
it is really disappointing because it's like I want to be a hunter. I want to play the game.
Yeah,
there's so much there that I enjoy. Want to engage in.
That's the other thing, right? Like, I really do want to play this game.
Yeah, I was, and still am excited to play this, play more of it, experience it, but. I'm never gonna cheese a boss fight. Like, if it ever happens, I might even just not do it. It just feels to me wrong.
Yeah, and I totally understand that. But for me, I didn't feel like, and I know there's gonna be at least one person listening who's thinking, yeah, but get good, and then you'd have a good time. I'm not going to pretend like I'm some expert gamer. Maybe I am just shit at Bloodborne, you know? And it's certainly not to my taste, if anything else. Like we've said, there's nothing wrong inherently with the game. It's just, you know, my reaction to it. And this kind of design, and with these kinds of these monsters and this cheese, like you were saying, like, I want to be that hunter. Like, I like the idea of coming up against a boss. And, like, we were talking about how the monster design's very generic. The bosses aren't generic. They actually are somewhat interesting. But when I get up to a boss, I'm like, yes, here we go. Massive challenge. This is compelling. I want to do something hard. I want to overcome it and feel that sense of, like, you know, like, excellence in what I've done and all that kind of thing. But every time you die, you go back, you don't respawn right at the boss, you go back to the nearest lantern. And even if you've unlocked all the shortcuts and the level design and stuff like that, you still have to run past at least, you know, sort of 6 to 12 enemies, making sure that you don't get hit by any of them. Then you've got to, you know, you've got to go through all of these loading screens and shit as well, which take longer than they should, in my opinion. And then you get up to the boss, and you traverse the fog again, and then you can fight them again. So there's these 4 to 5 minute gaps between attempts, which means that, like, I don't have the same immediacy to learn from my mistakes. And when you compare that to something like Super Meat Boy or Guitar Hero or one of these other challenge-focused games, in Super Meat Boy, when you die, a quarter of a second later, bang, you've respawned, you're at the start of the level, try it again. And it's just about perfecting that run. And there's something so, you build so much flow and so much investment, and it's so motivating. Whereas when I die and realize I have to do like another 5 minute walk back to the boss, all of the motivation is sapped out of me. And that's if I still have enough fucking blood vials to try again. Otherwise, then I have to go on a big grind to get souls to buy blood vials with. It's just, I wish, like, the boss fights are so compelling. I wish they didn't put all of this crap in my way before that. And once again, I know that people love that it's punishing. I don't. I just think that it's hurting my investment in the game. And I don't really understand why someone would want to go through less fun parts of the game to get back to the most fun part of the game.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I guess some people do. Some people really do enjoy it.
Awesome. High five. I'm glad that you have it. But, like, I'm surprised that Bloodborne was acclaimed in some of these ways that, you know, like, you know, the tightness of the combat system, the environmental storytelling, all that kind of stuff. I feel like so much of it is just a fair bit lower than where its hype kind of put that at for me, and it's a shame because I want to kill monsters. I want to be Van Helsing.
And look, I do think there is some elements of that there. Like, if you do, you know, there is ways to chain different attacks, and then when you get more weapons, they have different focuses. And then that can really, you know, that enhance the combat and swapping between weapons and understanding the best ways to fight certain monsters and what to do. There is that there. I just don't think that the game doesn't make any attempt to help you learn any of that.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, you look at the skill. This is one of those games that both from a mechanics perspective and a narrative perspective, you just have to have a wiki open next to you as you play it. I still don't really know what all of the stats do. Like, I know that blood tinge, for example, has something to do with your range damage, but I don't know what it does beyond that. I don't know what arcane does.
Can no idea what that does. Cast
spells, or is that just resistance? I don't know. And how all of that comes together. Again, it's a niche, but I do feel very lost when I look at it. And a lot of this stuff that people talk about when it comes to the narrative side and the environmental storytelling, I don't really understand what people are seeing in that. Because when I look shit up on the wiki, I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. That's interesting. It's interesting that, you know, this is the history of the Healing Church or whatever. I don't get any of that from the game, though. Mm. Like, there's games that have really, really good environmental storytelling. And the two that champion that, in my mind, are Half-Life 2 and Portal.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't necessarily think of those as environmental storytelling games because they have things like dialogue and discussions and stuff like that. But if you... so much about what you absorb about who the Combine are, for example, in Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
No one ever outright says it. No one ever outright says who they are. But just from, like, I didn't play any of the previous Half-Lives, anything like that. I went into Half-Life 2 completely cold when I played it. And I felt like I understood everything so naturally because of the way Breen talks to you on the monitors and because of the graffiti in the world. In this, I feel like people talk about, quote, environmental storytelling. And what they mean by that is, oh, if you want to find out that Father Gascoigne has a daughter, you have to go down into the sewers and then around here and then round up the back. And you have to go up this ladder. And when you walk past the tiny little strip of this window where you can hear the girl singing, if you hear her singing, you find out more about Gascoigne, environmental storytelling. But
wait, hold on. Like, let's be honest. Do you? It's not like really.
Yeah, and all she does is just say, oh, my dad's missing and my mum is missing. What's going on? Here, have a music box. And, like, that boss, Gascoigne, he's the one who I felt the most invested in. He's the one whom I felt like that boss fight had the most meaning because I knew even a single thing about him. But then, like, all of the bosses I fought, the Cleric Beast, the Bloodstarved Beast, Vicar Amelia, the Shadows of Yharnam, I don't know anything about them. I don't know why they're there or what, like, you know, you walk into Vicar Amelia's room, she's crying, and then she turns into a jackal, and it happens in this cutscene. And I'm expecting, like, oh, wow, you know, maybe I'll get some dialogue and some context of who this character is. Maybe she'll mention one. It's because you kind of get a little bit of stuff with Gascoigne about how all there is the hunt and stuff that. But when you get to Vicar Amelia, it's like, cry, 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 I'm a jackal now.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the whole game. The whole game is like, oh, what's around this corner? Oh, it's a troll. Oh, I better fight it.
Yeah.
It doesn't say anything.
And if that's all you need, if that's all you need to feel, if what you're looking for is, yeah, I want to talk to my friends about how hard this boss fight was, I want to have it look cool and be tough.
I want, you know, to play with my friends, because there is co-op in this game. And have fights together and explore.
But
it's
also worth mentioning that there is a proponent of the Souls fan base that thinks that if you're playing with that co-op feature, you're cheating.
Oh, which, yeah, but that's a discussion about that kind of culture.
Yeah, it is relevant to this conversation, because what I'm saying is, if you are a member of that culture, which is awesome.
Yeah. Some people...
Everything you want is right there. Like, yeah. I totally get that. It's just like, for me, I walk away from this fight after killing, you know, Vicar Amelia or killing the Shadows of Yharnam, both of which I found to be incredibly difficult fights. And it was very demoralizing as well, because apparently Vicar Amelia is one of the easiest bosses in the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, I walk away from these fights without a real sense of progression. It's like, okay, yes, I finally defeated this boss. What does that mean going forward? You know, like, I remember I defeated the bosses in the Shadow of Yharnam, right? And I let you get to Bergenworth. And so you go into Bergenworth, and then you have to fight this other very difficult enemy in there. And you get through the whole building, and these guys, I probably tried to fight them. Like, it took me 20, 30 odd tries to beat these guys. Wow. And every time I have to run back. So I eventually kill them, and I don't feel a sense of achievement. I feel a sense of relief because I don't have to do this anymore. Then I get to Bergenworth, go up to the top level and open up a chest, and I'm thinking, okay, this is what this was all for. I was fighting these dudes. I fought this other enemy to get this thing.
Yep.
It's a shell. And it's probably going to be relevant later. I don't know. But I look at that and I'm just like, What is that?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the way that it does the quests in the game and the side storytelling. It does not feel engaging, nor intuitive, nor make any sense. It doesn't feel compelling to me.
Yeah.
There's no elements that leap out. It's easily missable. There's like an old lady you can rescue, and it's just like, okay, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Should I move her? Shouldn't I move her?
There are a lot of those choices as well. Like, this is a... spoiler. We've obviously been in spoiler territory for a while now, but this is a fairly significant spoiler. When you find people in the world, you can send them to safe places, and two of the first safe places you come to are Ianefska.
I think that's how you say it.
Yeah, Ianefska's clinic, or the Odegon Chapel.
Yeah.
And apparently, if you send the people to Odegon to Ianefska's clinic, she gets killed and an imposter replaces her and starts experimenting on all the people. Yep. And there's no way you can know anything like that is going to happen.
Apparently, when you first meet her, she's really nice. And then when you meet her again and she's the imposter, she's really mean.
Yeah.
And from that, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I don't know. Maybe there is a strand. I just feel kind of blind to the plot, the whole game.
And look, this is stuff that doesn't need saying, because any Dark Souls fan will tell you this. The voice acting and character work is dog shit awful, right? Yeah. Like, it's not a focus of the game. It doesn't... I understand it's not supposed to be, but, like, even when you do talk to people and they're doing their weird, crazy laughs and they're gasping and they're crying and stuff, and so you've got this line of dialogue on the subtitle on the bottom of the screen that's, like, three words long, but because they're doing all of their crazy crying and stuff, the soundbite is, like, 15 seconds long and you just have to sit through it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only
voice work and character work marginally approaching something that I would consider good, if considering acceptable, is that of the doll. Yeah. Yeah.
That's only because she's playing a doll.
Yeah, and she's like the main NPC in the game.
Yeah.
You
would have thought that the studio could have gone from D-list actors, like voice actors, to C?
I think that you're giving them too much credit. I think that they could have hired voice actors.
Do you think that's just a studio, people from the translation
studio? I don't know if they're just people from the studio, but if those people, right, have a career in voice acting, they shouldn't.
Oh, and, wow.
Okay, that's unfair, because it is possibly the fact that it could be the director's fault. The director was like, be slow and bleak and sad. Or, and just said that to every single person.
They might not even be in the director.
Speak like you're in the Clone Wars movie.
Yeah, that's not a good metric to compare something to. I feel like when you get into games, sometimes you can sort of... you can look past things.
Mm.
And I think Bloodborne, for me, is just something that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Because I can kind of put my taste aside.
Yeah, and I know what you mean with that.
Like, you know, it's like, when I see something beautiful that's well constructed, especially like Undertale, something just wonderfully deep.
Yeah.
In every part of it. I really love things that just every part's working towards the goal.
Yeah.
Right. That's great.
It's very unified in design.
But sometimes I like terrible things. All right. And like weird European Russian games with nonsensical voice acting.
Like everybody likes schlock. You know what I mean? Like there's something, even if it's not specifically schlock, there's something trashy and pulpy that everybody likes. You know, like everybody's really shitty at the Warcraft movie. I thought that was fine, you know? Like, I know all of its flaws. Like, it's got so many flaws.
And I think they're obvious.
I walked out of that and I was just like, yeah, I was glad I put that time into it. But I think that the big difference between something like the Warcraft movie or those Russian games or whatever that you like is that, for me, I'm able to put my taste aside because I don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
Whereas if there's one thing... If there's one thing that the Dark Souls fan base isn't...
They take everything incredibly seriously.
Yeah.
They take this game seriously, the lore seriously, the whole world.
Yeah. And so going into... This isn't something where I... Like, this isn't the kind of kooky, fun, self-aware thing where I can just go like, ah, yeah, it's broken, but whatever. Like, so many of... Like I think I said this way back at the start. Ultimately, I did like Bloodborne. I just wish it didn't work so hard to make it... To make me not like it at the same time.
Yeah,
and there's definitely stuff that I really did like. Like, we didn't talk about this as much as we perhaps should have, but the actual layout of the level design is amazing in this game.
Yeah, it's like perfect example of layered. Mm. It's the height that they use. Like
parts. Verticality is very, very interesting.
You know, and like they do a lot of really great, clever things where they... The levels wrap around, and the way the shortcuts laid out, which is a Dark Souls staple.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. It's
great. It's so awesome. Like, it's such clever design. Nothing... when you open up like a gate and you go, "Oh, I'm here. I recognize this. The lamp is just there. I've just cut out, you know, 2 kilometers on this track." Like, that's very, very clever. It's very, very well done, and I absolutely loved that. You run these paths, and because you do it so many times, they just burn into your memory. And they're so distinct.
It's very easy to recall them. Like, we could sit here and describe. I bet between the two of us, we could easily describe how the central Yharnam is laid out.
Yeah.
How it all plugs together and all the shortcuts and things and like that. You learn it through the experience playing again.
Yeah, it is very memorable in that regard, and it's very, very clever. Like, if there is only one thing in this game that completely lived up to it, the expectation I had for it, it was that.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Bloodborne, interesting game. I'm really glad that I had the experience, and I understand it now. But for me, this isn't going to be one of those things where, like... I dive back into this very deeply.
No, to me, this is going to be a game... It's a slow burn for me.
Yeah.
I know I'm definitely going to jump back into it once I have a free moment, play it a bit more. But it's not something I'm going to be just wanting to play all the time and push my way through.
Yeah.
And it's just that experience is just too draining.
I know this probably sounds a little bit pretentious, but I just need a little bit more food for thought in something that's going to be... For me to be, like, really... emotionally, when I say really emotionally, but for me to be like really impressed and surprised and like in love with
engaged,
just like, yeah, really passionate about a game, I just need a little bit more food for thought. I just need a little bit more emotional engagement, and that's not the focus of what this game is.
No, it's just a bit too cryptic, and it just wants to hide things from you. I feel like it's just like that kind of, it's like the game wants to fight you, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't want to fight you, game. Like, I want to work with you, you know. Like, I want to experience this together, and I just never get that.
Mm.
And it just disappoints me, because, like, I want to take this game, I want to give it a big hug, and I want to enjoy playing it, and the game is called Covenant Spikes, and it's going, no, I won't tell you what's going on. No, that cool person, you will have no idea who they are. Mm. And I'm just like, okay, I'll read the wiki.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. I feel like this is a game that maybe I'll look into some Let's Plays, maybe I'll read the wiki, but I don't feel like the harrowing tribulation of playing it is worth the rewards that it's giving me. But that's Bloodborne. That's how we feel about that one.
Yep.
As I said before, we are recording these out of order. So the next episode that goes up is going to be one we've already recorded, which is Undertale.
Yes,
Undertale. I don't really know what to talk about here, because I don't want to spoil
that
podcast.
Go listen to it. It's Undertale.
I will say this. I'm not so much of a grouch in that episode.
Yeah,
I'm not quite so salty.
I just kind of let you go because I felt like you had a lot you needed to say. Yeah, I'm just going to let David just say what he needs to say. He's going to work through it, and we're going to have a nice.
I won't apologize for my feelings about the game, but I will apologize for inundating you with them. Ultimately, no, I feel like. Yeah, if you're looking for something a little bit more cheery, definitely take a look at the Undertale episode.
Yeah.
If you do want to get in touch with us and tell me to stop being such a salty bastard or why I need to get good.
Yes.
You can email us at our email address.
Yep, you can.
And you can also comment here, like, share, and subscribe.
Do the Twitter thing.
The Twitter thing, yep. We also have a Patreon, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
Half of this is still in the works.
Yeah,
but
I feel a bit presumptive creating a Patreon right now, but then again...
It's one of those things, like, I feel like it's more for me about the psychological reward. If we're getting 60 cents a month... Oh. That's me going, well, I mean, we've got paying listeners. We have to make the next episode.
We are professionals.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like maybe we have that, maybe we don't. But everything will be in the description. Yep. Thanks so much for listening and look forward to my next episode, which will be Undertale.
Undertale. Have fun.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Our website is slowpokespodcast.com. You can also find us on Twitter at slowpokescast and our email address slowpokespodcast@gmail.com. If you feel like supporting us on Patreon, just head to patreon.com/slowpokespodcast.
If you like the music that was created for the show, you can see more of Travis's work at jennybitesback.bandcamp.com. And if you like the artwork around the place, look for Thomas Blackman Bishop's work at cardialnetwork.tumblr.com.